Some of your favorite actors have used Backstage to kickstart their career. Denzel Washington, Al Pacino, Viola Davis, Chris Evans, that's Captain America. All you have to do to be just like Captain America is go to backstage.com/subscribe and enter the code ENVELOPE at checkout for a 30-day free trial. That's 30 days of access to thousands of casting notices uploaded daily. Subscribe to Backstage today, and again, use code ENVELOPE at checkout, ENVELOPE, for free.
I think that moving forward, I just want to find those people that share my values to work with and continue to share stories and create art, because that's what artists are meant to do. They're meant to like talk about the state of the world and create art to make people think and make people feel.
Welcome to a brand new episode of In the Envelope, the Actors Podcast, where the most award-worthy names in film, television, and theater join me, Backstage Senior Editor Vinny Mancuso, for a complete guide to the creative life. And that includes navigating major, unexpected shifts in your career, which is why we are thrilled to be joined today by the deeply talented Melissa Barrera. Now, there's a pretty good chance you've seen Melissa's name recently as it relates to the Scream franchise. Along with co-stars like Jenna Ortega and Jasmine Savoy Brown, Melissa helped revive the late, great Wes Craven's iconic slasher franchise with the 5th and 6th entries in 2022 and 2023, respectively. And it's also a franchise that Melissa is no longer involved with. She was surprisingly let go by Spyglass Media due to social media posts regarding the crisis in Gaza. We, of course, touched on that and how the experience sort of reframed her views on the industry and her place within it. We also dove into the career that led her to this place, as well as the future that lies in front of her. That includes Abigail, her latest starring vehicle, a reimagining of the universal horror classic Dracula's Daughter, from her Scream collaborators Matt Bettinelli-Olpin and Tyler Gillette. Melissa plays Joey in the film, one of 6 criminals hired to kidnap and ransom a young girl who turns out to have a taste for blood. This is a great, wide-ranging chat. Let's just get right into it. Here is Melissa Barrera. Melissa, how are you doing? I'm so happy to hear that you are done for the day. I'm glad to hear that we are your last of the day. And it's a pleasure to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. Thank you.
I feel like you're in the middle of a Abigail whirlwind. You are doing interviews, you're traveling, you're talking to a lot of people. How do you find that promotional time of a person comes in, you have a conversation, a person comes in, have a conversation. What is that? How do you feel about that?
It can be draining, you know, to do that, because we do that all day long and you're mostly answering the same questions over and over again. But it's always really nice when the people that are interviewing you actually like the movie, and so it makes it easier. And this has been the case for Abigail. I think people are really, they're like genuinely enjoying it, and we can see the excitement when they come in the room, and so that at least, you know, makes it nice, you know, to chat about it, because we really loved making it. We really loved the movie and how it turned out. So when it's well received, it's always nice.
Amazing. Well, good news for you. I did see Abigail. I did love Abigail. It is the type of movie that demands, you know, just seeing it with a crowd, seeing it with people. You want the reaction. I think that, you know, that it ups it. It's the type of movie I cannot wait to get into it. I do want to ask, because I was going through tons of your old interviews to prepare for this, you know, stuff you said in the past. And there's something I found really interesting. I think you were talking to the New York Times many, many years ago, talking about media junkets. I don't want to talk too much about talking, but yeah. I just found it interesting that you mentioned something about how you, at the time, saw them as another chance to act, to sort of take on a role and play someone else. So I am curious about that, you know, as the person on the other side of the screen, talk to a lot of actors, you know, I'm always curious about where you're getting practice, training. I'm curious how you see that nowadays, the act of talking to people as acting training.
I mean, there is a part of it where you kind of like put on the happy face, because doing press is, I'm not going to lie, not my favorite part of the process. I really enjoy, you know, making a movie and the whole rehearsal process, the execution of it. That's my favorite part. And then so much time passes between you go into press and sometimes you just gotta keep the energy up and make sure that, I don't know, like I've seen so many people in the industry that just seem so uninterested in promoting their film. And I just think that is not a good look. So no matter what, if you're tired or whatever, because you've been doing this for 7 hours straight and you're answering the same questions, you got to keep it interesting. So it's like acting in a way, because when you're acting, you're doing a scene 50 times and each time it has to feel fresh. So that's the similarity of it all. Like you have to figure out a way to answer the same question in a different way and make it feel like the first time that you're answering it. And so I think that's probably what I meant. I also really love playing, like dressing up during press and like playing with hair and makeup. Like that also makes me look forward to press days, because it's a way of like, this is not my regular look, like at all on a daily. So it's kind of like the character of the actress that is promoting a film that I get to put on and play.
I love that. Well, we are very interested in who you are as an actor, you know, the road that got you to Abigail. You know, at Backstage, we are a place for actors, you know, aspiring actors, people at the beginning of their career. So I do want to start, you know, all the way at the beginning. And I was reading old interviews of yours, stuff you've mentioned, and something I sort of zeroed in on is that you've mentioned that as a kid you were painfully shy. That's something we hear a lot. You know, people who are now in front of the camera, they grew up, you know, not really wanting that attention. So I'm curious, what was the initial draw to acting for you? You know, what was the jumping over that barrier for you all the way back then?
I think for me, it's always about the feelings that performance can evoke in an audience. I grew up mostly like in sports. I played basketball my whole life. I ran track when I was younger. I was in dance classes and that was kind of like a thing. And you're part of a team. You're part of a group. So it's not like spotlight is on you. You're kind of just like one of the bunch. And I went to a school that had a really good arts program and there was constant like plays and musicals that were being put on, and I would always go and see them, and I would just be thrilled watching these kids that were like my age or a little bit older playing these characters and telling these stories, and what they made me feel always like stuck with me for days afterwards, and I would dream about it and I would think about it and I would always wish that I was on the stage with them. And I think eventually it got to the point where I was like, I'm just gonna go audition. And I like took my whole basketball team with me, because obviously I didn't want to go by myself. So I made them all come with me and we all auditioned. And a few of us got in. We were, you know, in the ensemble of The Wizard of Oz. And that was like my first kind of musical that I did. And I just fell in love with it. Like the whole kind of ritual of doing theater, the rehearsal process, the bonding, the coming out of your shell, the lovingness of theater people, the acceptance of everyone, like everyone is welcome thing. And I think that was my way in. I wanted to make people feel the way that I was feeling watching shows. I was like, I love this feeling. I can't stop thinking about this. I love that they take me on this journey. I love that I can identify with these characters and that I'm thinking about them like for an entire week afterwards. And I want to make people feel that way.
You have a ton of play experience, you know, in your early days, your educational days. You know, you were American School Foundation of Monterey. You did stuff like Grease, Aida, Footloose. You NYU Cap 21 as well. You did stuff like Sweet Charity, Caucasian Chalk Circle, stuff like that. I'm curious if there's any early performance for you where things, you know, maybe crystallized, or if you have a foundational moment, or, you know, anything where it went from something you really wanted to do to like, oh, I'm developing a process. I'm developing a
a presence. I'm developing who I am as an actor. And it wasn't just, you know, I want to do this. It's, oh, I can do this. And this is how I'm going to do it.
I did, when I was 17, I did like a regional production of a French musical. It was an adaptation of Romeo and Juliet. And that was like my first paid job. And I was, you know, I was 17. I think I turned 18 during the performances. And that was my first kind of professional experience. And because it was like a regional production, but I had still like gone out and auditioned, and I had been auditioning for a while, like no luck, you know? But I got cast in that as Juliet, and I got the experience of like rehearsing for a professional show and having like 8 shows a week. And I was like, you know, applying for colleges and school at the same time and all of that. And I just loved the life. And I was like, I could do this. Like I think I could actually do this for the rest of my life. It's not just like a dream anymore. It's not just like a hobby. I saw it as like, this is actually something that I could make a living out of. And I think that also helped my mom realize that I could actually make a living off of that, because up until then, my mom was the most supportive person ever. Like I could tell her like, Mom, I want to learn paragliding. And she'd be like, okay, let me Google like where you can be in classes. Like she's the most supportive. But that, I think, theater and the acting of it, it was just like no one around us that did that professionally, like no one that we knew, no one in my hometown. So it didn't feel real. And when I did that show, I think she realized like, oh wow, okay, she's actually good. She got cast in this, she could do that. And I was already on my way to like applying for schools, and that I was going to audition for like musical theater programs. That really helped solidify her support. And then after I did that, my last, like my senior year of high school, I did Aida in school. And I discovered like my comedic chops there. Like I realized that I had comedic timing for the first time. And I like loved the sound of laughter. Like when you make people laugh in an audience, there's nothing quite like that. And so that was also like a moment for me where I was like, I'm funny. Okay. I like this. And it was just like I still remember, cause I was auditioning for both Aida and Amneris. Obviously, you know, this is a Mexican production. So like, it's not like authentic casting, but like, so I was auditioning for both roles, and I was up against like one of my really good friends, and we were both auditioning for both roles. And when we were like literally doing our final callback, and when I played Amneris, the whole like all the teachers that were casting, the whole creative team were like cracking up. And I was like, I didn't even know that line was funny, you know, like that kind of thing. And so I got that role, and it was an incredible experience for me. And that's when, like, it's sort of like when you accidentally find out that you can do something, and it's like, oh, wow, like, that's cool. Let me hone that. Let me like become even better. Oh, yeah. That was another like cool experience in my acting journey.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you mentioned, you know, discovering you had comedic timing, because something I love asking people on this show, because we get all different kinds of answers, is whether or not you think that somebody can, you know, who wants to be an actor, wants to be a comedian, can learn comedic timing, whether or not it's a skill that must be in there, or if it's like music where you can learn the notes. Does it depend? I'm always curious to hear what people think.
I think you can learn everything. I genuinely think that you can learn everything. But I also think that especially like comedy, comedic timing is something that certain people are just have. And that like, it's just natural to them. And I do think that comedy is hard. I think it's probably harder than drama, in my opinion. And I think some of the funniest actors that I know are some of the best actors, because not everyone can have the comedic timing that feels natural and that's like effortless. That's the funniest kind, I think. But almost all like really, really good comedians can be dramatic. So I don't know, like one of the like the prime examples for me are like Jim Carrey and Steve Carell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like these are like some of the funniest actors. And then they can like tear your heart out in their dramatic roles. And I know that like Jim Carrey, like something like, I don't know, like I just used to be obsessed with him. So I would watch like everything that he did. And some of his most dramatic roles, like people just don't even think about, but like he's like really, really good.
Absolutely.
And Steve Carell, obviously, we know that he's an incredible actor, both comedy and drama. But yeah, I do think that like there's I have a special like admiration for really good comedic actors.
It is something that, like you said, it's so hard, and when it's done right, it looks effortless. So it kind of, I always find it kind of flies under the radar sometimes, you know, it doesn't get the awards recognition, you know, supporting characters that are in comedies, they're doing incredible, incredible character work, but be like, oh, they're just funny. It's like, no, that's hard.
That's actually.
It's interesting that you mentioned watching people growing up, seeing what people are doing. I'm curious, I've seen you again. This is just something you said in the past. I hate throwing people's words back at them, but
oh, it's fine.
It's the research. I've seen you say that you're not the type of actor who, you know, disappears into a role. You have a process that's very, you know, relating to the character, finding your way in. I'm curious at what point in the process of booking jobs, doing auditions, where you discovered what your preferred process is. And it's always so awkward to ask people what their process is because it's, you know, it's such a loaded term. But when did you sort of think to yourself or discover or just sort of find that, oh, this is what works for me. This is what I'm going to do when I am step one preparing for a character.
I tried it all, I think, you know, because when you're in acting school, you get taught lots of ways to like analyze scene, reading between the lines and doing the four lists and like, you know, writing a diary of their entire life and, you know, all sorts of things to get into a character, to create a character. So I've pretty much done it all and even like method acting and like trying to like not get out of the character ever while you're, and I just found that that's exhausting. Mm-hmm. And that it doesn't really make me any better, personally. I think everyone has their own process. I don't have a set process, really. It kind of varies depending on the role. Some roles for me require much more work than others. I find that sometimes if I have like a source material, like that's enough for me to like do an investigation and fill in the blanks of the script. Sometimes the script itself gives you a lot of information for the character. Sometimes I like go out and do research. I like go and interview people. It depends on the role and how prepared I feel for it or not. But I don't really have like a set process. I think I just try to fill in as many blanks as I can.
Mm-hmm.
I've listened to a lot of actors that I admire and I've kind of stolen little things from them. I always, one thing that really helps me is acquiring a skill for a character. You know, like that really helps me get into a character. If I have to learn something that the character knows how to do and I don't, as Melissa, that in itself is a very good way for me to like get into the skin of a new character. But as I've gotten older and as I've worked more, I think I've gotten less intense about it. And I used to, for example, like do so much writing and fill my scripts up with like thoughts and monologues and ideas and reading between the lines and a little back history and like what she's thinking, the inner monologue, like all these things I would write down. And that helped. But then I would like be so in my head and if I had like an emotional scene, I start getting ready for it like from the night before. And I was just like miserable, you know, I wasn't like really like having fun on set. And it was when I was doing this movie in New Mexico that I was playing like a recovering addict. And I'd gotten to interview a lot of the the women that this character was based off of, and I got to meet their families, and I had gotten to explore, you know, this Albuquerque, which is where it was based in. And I was like, wow, if I'm in character for like full month that we're shooting this, it was 16 days, but like I was there for a month, I'm gonna be miserable. This might like really take a toll on me. So I was like, I'm gonna like risk it, and I'm gonna just trust that all the work that I've done is gonna show up when they call action, and I'm gonna try to just like have fun. And I did that, and it worked. And I was like, okay, cool. I don't ever have to like stress and you know, feel like I have to be miserable and in character all the time to, you know, deliver a good performance. So yeah, I tried to have more fun nowadays. I tried to like do the work beforehand, so that when I show up, I can literally just have fun. And I never take the character home with me. I'm always like, take the clothes off, character stays there in the dressing room or in the trailer. And I can just go home and I can sleep. I can like rest and I can get ready for the next day.
I think that is the healthy way to approach the job.
People love hearing stories of like method and like how intense people are.
Oh, I know.
Like, honestly, like that doesn't always necessarily mean that that's a better performance, but people love the intensity.
I think it's just easier, you know, because acting, it's hard to understand how people do it, you know? And I think it's just easier when people are like, oh, I did this. It's just easy to understand, you know? It's just like, oh, well, that makes sense. But when someone's like, I didn't feel this thing, they called action, and then I felt it. That's very, that takes, again, it's kind of like the comedy thing. That takes a lot of work to get to that place. But it sounds like, oh, so it's easy for you? No, it's not easy. It's just, I don't want to torture myself.
Yeah, exactly. And I find like, I love listening to Olivia Colman talk, because I think she's so incredible in everything that she does. So present and so relaxed is what I find. Like, she's so relaxed in front of the camera. And I think the more relaxed you are, the more truthful you can be, and the easier you can access like your emotions. So that's key. And she just is always so relaxed on camera. And you ask her, like, what did you do? They ask her, like, what did you do to prepare to this? She was like, I learned my line. No, that doesn't mean that that's the best process for everyone. She's obviously like very gifted and she's just good. Mm-hmm. But it just goes to show that you don't, like, not everyone needs to do the most to get a good performance.
I am curious because, you know, when it comes to the many things in your skill set, you're trained in musical theater. And like you mentioned, your background is sort of comedy and soaps and stuff like that. But you've been really delving into the horror genre. And I'm curious, you know, the sort of choreography of horror, the sort of theatricality of horror. What are some specific sort of like things that you're trained in, good at, you know, that are kind of have surprisingly helped in doing this very, you know, physically intense horror that you've been doing over the past couple of years?
Exactly that. Like being physical. I've always been very physical my entire life. I've always been very active. I played basketball. I danced. When I was in college, I also trained. And to this day, I work out a lot. And so I think just keeping my body in the best, in the most agile shape really helps me to feel that I'm like ready for whatever gets thrown at me. And especially in horror, where there's like so much chasing and fight sequences and, you know, struggles and all of that. And I like to do as much of my stunts that as they allow me to do. And feeling strong in my body gives me more confidence to be able to do all of that. And just, it makes me feel better with myself, really, just knowing that I'm like, that I feel strong and that I can do anything that they want me to do, or at least try, you know? So yeah, I think just being active is a big part of my life. And in horror, it does come in handy. Definitely.
The endurance of it. I am, because we sort of touched on this a little bit. And again, I don't want to talk about junkets, but you mentioned the sort of keeping the energy up. So with something like Abigail specifically, it's a movie that's, you know, it's heavy on practicality. It's heavy on sets and, you know, really dirtying up those sets. people that don't really understand the logistics of production, for every blood explosion, for every geyser or anything like that, that is a reset for another take. That is, oh, I have to sit here while we clean this up, clean me up, so we can do one more take. Can you tell me a little bit about those in-between periods where it's go, 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 big blood everywhere, blood spray, and then you're like, we didn't quite get it. The focus was off. The focus was this. Sitting in that moment and being like, I have to keep the energy up. I have to stay, you know, not in the character, but stay present while they clean the blood off the sheets. What is that like for you? You know, keeping it take, take, take.
I'm the, like Matt and Tyler would attest to this, that I'm huge on emotional continuity. And me, because it's one of my biggest pet peeves when, like, you know, you have a character that's like yelling outside and they walk inside the house and they look like bored. I'm like, literally your face was red. You were just yelling. And like, you know, like, so I'm always asking, remind me where we just came from. Cause we don't shoot in order. Right. I'm like, what was the last thing? What, and who was I with? And what did I say? And how did I leave? What was the pace of the running so that I can do the exact same pace as I'm coming into this? You know, like that to me is very important. So I'm very good, I think, because I'm very OCD about continuity, about keeping the energy. And I rarely go back to my trailer, to my room. I always stay on set. I like being on set. I like seeing how people do their jobs. I like hanging at the monitor. I like learning about lighting, and I like just hanging out with the directors. And Matt and Tyler create that kind of set where you can just hang out and everyone just wants to be there. So that really helps, not leaving and like sitting down and like taking a nap. I can't take naps ever during production, because I'm like, my eyes are going to stick together. I'm going to look like I just took a nap. My eyes are going to swell. So I'm just like there. And I like to be on set. We have a lot of fun. So I try, you know, I've been very lucky that I've worked on sets, almost all of the projects that I've been a part of, where we all get along really well, cast and crew. And so in the in-betweens, we're all like chatting and having fun and laughing and telling jokes. And so that really helps to keep the energy up. Although there are some times where after take number 15, doing, I don't know, whatever, and Matt will be like, your energy is a little low. Can you bring it up? And I'll just be like, well, yep, it's take 20. So, okay, thank you for telling me that. And you know, that's it. That's, you just bring it up. You either do jumping jacks or burpees or whatever you need to do, and you're back in it.
I don't even remember who said it on this podcast, but somebody, you know, was telling me about this advice they got, where before every action, they think about, you know, where am I coming from? Where was my character 1 second before they come on screen? And I never thought about that, because it just keeps the, you're sort of launching yourself into the scene.
And it just creates like the through line. It just feels more seamless. And because it's really hard to shoot in order, that's like, that's something that I always notice when I'm watching films, when there's like a break in energy or a break in something that doesn't feel like it's seamless. Mm-hmm. And I always notice that. So it's something that I try really hard to not have happen for me in my, you know, in my character arc.
There's a scene at the sort of the front end of Abigail, before it gets to, you know, the turn, you know, to where it is, before it dials itself up, where it's just sort of, you know, your character sort of very skill, very artfully delivering exposition, you know, in a very cinematic way. And it's just you and the cast, you know, Dan Stevens, Catherine Newton, just in a room and talking. So I am curious, you know, on the opposite end of the spectrum from the big bombastic things, it's almost theater-like. And I'm curious what that's like for you in front of a camera, you know, where it's just you and the actors and you're just sort of playing off each other's energies. I don't want to say how do you prepare for that, but how does that differ for you than these big physical things, where it's the challenge is be dynamic on screen by just existing?
It is very theatrical. There's a lot of like really long scenes in this movie where you have all the, you know, the six stooges, just like bouncing back and forth. And that scene where I'm kind of reading everyone you know, and telling them you're this and you're that. That was like the second day of shooting. That was like the first scene that we shot. And I was really nervous about that because I was like, this, I'm establishing who Joey is in this scene. And I had no idea who Joey was still, you know? So that was for me, like the scene where I was like, all right, don't fuck this up. Because this is like the first time that we really see her talk. And we're going to know a lot about who she is because of the way that she is reading everyone. And it was fun because I had everyone there to play with, and everyone's reactions were surprising to me. I, you know, because you come in, obviously, I've studied the script, I've read the lines, I know my lines, and I know everybody else's lines. And sometimes you kind of can tell how someone is going to deliver their lines because not everyone is like doing crazy things all the time. But I think in this specific movie, I was just constantly shocked and amazed by how all of my co-stars were doing unexpected things with their characters. I had this idea coming in of what all these characters were going to be, and they just all like turned them on their heads. And that kept it really interesting for me. You know, like as Joey is kind of like the most like straightforward of them all, she's kind of like the emotional pillar in the movie. She's in a drama and everybody else is in like a wacky horror. And so my job was to keep it all very grounded and very real and very like high stakes so that everyone else around me could play. So yeah, it was cool. I love those big talk scenes, even though they're like tedious because it takes, especially when you have so many characters, there's a lot of coverage. So it took us like 3 days to shoot that scene. It's super fun because it does feel like I'm going back to my theater days. I love long talky scenes are my favorite. But I also love showing up to set and being like, looking at the sides and being like, woo, no lines today. Awesome. I can, you know, like I just have to drag myself on the ground and slip in blood. And like, that's also cool. I also enjoy that.
Part of the job. I am curious because of your theatrical background. I've talked to a lot of people who do theater where they sort of say, I learn as I go along. You know, I have a better idea of who the character is at closing than opening. And you do have a scene in a film like that where it's very important, but it's day two and you have this, you have to nail this shot. How is it sort of letting go that that's the take or those are the takes that's going to be in the movie? You know, there is no day two of that scene. There's no day three of that scene. You have those takes. So I'm curious, what is the process like for you just sort of accepting that I gave it my best shot? That is what that's my day shooting that scene. And that's what's going to be in the movie.
Yeah. I feel horrible all the time. It's awful. I never think that I did the best that I could have done. I'm always like, oh, that sucks. But you got to trust that like the directors saw something and they can, like all they need is one good take. That's literally all they need. So even if like I feel like shit, if they're like, we got it, especially with Matt and Tyler, like we know each other so well. But at this point, if they say we got it, I'm like, okay, yeah. And sometimes they'll be like, we got it. Do you want one more? And I'll always say yes. Like always. I will never turn down another take. But I've learned to like really trust them because I know that I will never be happy with myself.
I've also heard people say that one last take is the place to play. You know, like I'm gonna take this yeah. to just, you know, I wasn't gonna do it when we didn't have it, but now we have it. I'm gonna try something.
And sometimes that's the winner, you know? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're like, oh, you discover something. You're like, oh, cool. That was different and that felt right. And you know, you gave them options. I always want to give the directors options for them to play with in the edit.
I'm curious because we've talked about how you sort of, you know, discovered things over the course of working, you know, trial and error, finding your process as you got older and worked more. Working with Alicia as Abigail, who's incredible in this movie, I'm curious about working with basically a kid actor taught you about acting, you know, because it's I feel like it's easy to sort of get into your own process, and then you work with a kid actor and you're like, oh, they're very fresh to this. What did working with her and seeing her process as somebody who is new to the industry teach you about your own way you work?
I've always been very impressed by child actors. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a child actor. I didn't start acting until I was like, you know, in theater and when I was 17, 18, and then TV until I was 21. So I just am deeply in awe of what children can conjure up and how they can like play pretend and do it so well. Because even when I was starting out, I sucked and I was a little older. So I'm always like deeply impressed. And Alicia is such a natural and so professional. It never felt like I was acting with a child. You know, she always felt like a professional, you know, just a tiny professional. And what I loved about her the most, I think what I learned about her is the fearlessness of like committing to a choice and like doing it and doing it fully every time. That was beautiful for me to watch. And I was so impressed by her, not just because of her acting and like, you know, all the things that she had to do. She's Irish. She was doing an American accent. She was wearing contacts.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah. That's impressive. She was doing an American accent. She had like teeth that like made her talk weird. But she had to get used to that. She's wearing contacts that made her like partially like blurry blind. And she's wearing this like tutu. And she's having to like do all these like acrobatic, like balletic moves and sell them in like all their truth. And like a gajillion lines. And her being the only child with like all adults. Like it was just so impressive, you know? And I think she's such a star. And I learned so much of her from her like commitment and her fearlessness. And yeah, it was just amazing. It was just incredible. Like, I think she has such a, like a bright future ahead of her. Like the idea that this is her second big movie and she's already played a character like this. Mm-hmm. Like that's crazy. The range, right? Like it's just incredible. I adore her. And she's also like the sweetest person. I just love her. The hardest part I think about working with a child, not anything to do with her, but because they have to like go on breaks. Mm-hmm. So we would shoot all her stuff and then she would have to like go on and do schooling. Poor thing. She was always like trying to get out of the school and she was like, can I just hang out here? We would like make her go and take school.
Oh, you legally have to go do math right now.
Yeah. And so a lot of the times we had to act with a stand-in. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't the same, right? Having like the incredible elite, like giving her performance versus having just a stand-in like there. But it was just like, I don't know, she's so amazing.
I love that. It is a very, very impressive performance. Yeah. So as we sort of come, you know, as we wrap up a bit here, I do want to sort of turn to the future and all of that type of stuff. And it's something I absolutely don't want to harp on, but I just want to touch on briefly is, you know, the whole experience with the Scream franchise. And, you know, if anybody's interested, your statement's not hidden. You have, it's out there for all to see. I am curious though, as who you are as an actor, having gone through that on the other side of it, how that affects you as somebody in the industry, you know, has it changed your goals? Has it changed who you, your sort of view on the industry? Basically, how does it affect you as somebody, you know, in this industry who has their own goals and is sort of navigating all the complication that comes with the industry? How has it changed your mindset as an actor and a performer and a presence?
It's made me definitely look at the industry differently. It really disappointed me, you know, a lot. Like it kind of like, I don't know what you would call it, but there was a definitely disillusionment that happened, but it also like made me stronger And it did change my perspective of like what I want to do with my career that goes beyond acting and really like continuing to stand up for people that need it and to speak about the state of the world and the injustices. But I also like it gave me so much hope because I've found that I have so much support too. You know, like it's not all nice out there, but there are a lot more loving people and supportive people and like-minded people. So that gives me hope. And I think that moving forward, I just want to find those people that share my values to work with and continue to share stories and create art, because that's what artists are meant to do. They're meant to like talk about the state of the world and create art to make people think and make people feel. And that's what I want to continue to do. And I want to really be purposeful, be very intentional with the stories that I choose to be a part of moving forward. And I just want to help to make the industry feel like a safer place for everyone and, you know, make it better.
Absolutely. And you've also mentioned that part of that goal is a desire to direct and produce yourself. I think, you know, work on indie stuff like My Monster, you know, it kind of showed, you know, the power of having creative control and stuff like that. So as we come to the end of our timing, I'm curious what ideally a directed, produced by you project is. You know, what is the type of thing that you would like to be at the helm of in an ideal scenario?
All sorts of things. I would love to do to start a new exciting like action adventure franchise. I would love to continue to do musicals. I love musicals. I would love to also continue to expand on Latin representation in Hollywood and continue to elevate Latino voices. And just like compelling stories, compelling characters, stories that are aspirational and hopeful and that showcase the best of humanity. That's also, I think, important.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Melissa, thank you so much for being here. I think by the time it's coming out, Abigail will be in its second week. See you again if you must. See you for the first time. It is truly, truly a joy, a gem. It's the type of movies that I love to see in theaters because it's just that original mid-budget type thing that is just, we need more of.
Yeah.
So it's a pleasure to meet you.
It's nice to meet you too.
Thanks as always to our brilliant producer Jamie Muffet and to the whole team at Backstage, Samantha Sherlock, Mark Stinson, Caitlin Watkins, and of course Casey Howe. Visit backstage.com and don't forget you can subscribe to Backstage with code ENVELOPE at checkout for a free trial. 100% free, you simply cannot beat that. For more exclusive content, find us on Facebook and Twitter at In The Envelope, and subscribe, share, and leave a comment. Who should we interview next? Let us know. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time for another peek in the envelope.